Welcome to the College Football Bros. I'm Michael Newman.
And I'm Trey Newman.
All right, so we decided to dust the cobwebs off of our Twitter and Instagram and went to get some questions from the listeners. So thanks everyone who sent those in. We'll start with Logan, and he asks, if you had to doomsday prep with any college football coach, who would it be?
Okay, so yeah, my mindset with this is, you know, who could I tolerate sharing a lot of close time with, and who wouldn't be, you know, selfish and take all the supplies. I ended up actually landing on Lane Kiffin.
Just interesting.
Well, he might not be the most resourceful, but I'm thinking he if I have to be around him for a period, I like his humor, doesn't seem to take things too seriously. Just kind of seems like I could have an enjoyable time. I don't want someone where I just end up wringing their neck.
Yeah, if you found someone too boring, like maybe if you found a great place to hide and you were kind of just waiting it out, you need someone to conversate with. But I was thinking more of survival, and so I wanted someone to lead me, because I wouldn't know what I was doing in a doomsday scenario. So Marcus Freeman, Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah.
His players love him, so I'm sure he's a great leader. And he also just seems like he would be cool under pressure, because he'd be wanting to freak out, but I can't imagine Marcus Freeman freaking out. And then there's also the possibility that hopefully, you know, you might need to cuddle for warmth, something like that, a survival situation. Gosh. And, you know, I could see that happening.
You could see that happening, or you want to see that happening?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. You got to survive. You got to do what you got to do to survive.
That's true.
Marcus Freeman's like, it's 65 degrees, Michael. Well,
I like chilly. The snuggle. Yeah. All right. So we got one from GVDOSFS, and top five G5 programs to get a CFP spot.
Okay. So I don't know how you took this one, but I took it as this year.
What did you like starting in 2024?
Like just who's going to get the spot in 2024?
Yes.
That's fine if you. Okay. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Like I didn't include SMU essentially because they're in the ACC.
Well, yeah. No. And I just mean like I didn't think of it as more of long term who's going to be the most likely teams to get that. I meant like the actual teams this year. Who's going to get that?
That's G5 slot.
Okay. So I'll go through my top five. Number one. If I start number one or number five?
Five.
All right. We're going five. Number five. I'm going Miami of Ohio. It's gonna be hard for a MAC team to make it just because of strength of schedule. But they do play Northwestern, Cincinnati, and Notre Dame in the non-conference, so maybe they can somehow squeak out two of those. And, you know, they won the MAC last year. They're top 10 in the country in returning production. So they have, you know, of the G5 teams, they have one of the best chances to go undefeated, at least in conference. So threw Miami of Ohio in there. Brett Gabbert coming back from injury. Number four, Boise State. I'm guessing that they'll be the favorites in the Mountain West. They return Ashton Gentry at running back and bring in Malachi Nelson, who I assume it's not a shoe-in for him to be quarterback because he's still young and unproven, but there's the potential there. App State, number three, because I think JMU takes a massive step back. They're 126 in returning production. They lose Kurt Cignetti. And then also in conference, Troy, I think, is going to
regress.
Take a big step back. So 129th in returning production, losing John Summerall. So that leaves App State in the Sun Belt with Joey Aguilar coming back at quarterback. He came out from out of nowhere last year. So they're number three. Number two, Memphis. They won 10 games last year. They're they bring back Seth Hennigan at quarterback, which is big. And they're in a conference, the American, which at least gets some respect from the committee. Yeah. So I feel like the winner of that conference has a decent chance of being in the playoff. And the other top contenders in the American, UTSA and Tulane, lose a ton. So could leave Memphis as the favorite. And then number one, I'll go Liberty, just because Jamie Chadwell, I trust him. He gets Caden Salter back at quarterback, which I did not expect. So, and they're just, of course, such a big favorite in Conference USA.
So, yeah, we're also not... I didn't consider Washington State and Oregon State here.
Good point. Yeah.
So, like, if I let me put it this way, So I'm going to go, I'll work my way back. And I did, my fifth was Fresno State. I like Jeff Tedford. He's done a good job with Fresno. Mikey Keene's back, year two of his offense. They could be good and challenge Boise. I also had App State, just because I like Joey Aguilar. Number four, I had Boise, like you. You know, replacing Talen Green might be tough, but maybe Nelson steps in. And then I actually would have, if you put Washington State, Oregon State, I almost like tied essentially at my third, would be my third spot.
Okay, yeah.
I kind of had them equal because like Oregon State, they lose so much, including Jonathan Smith. And, you know, Washington State, they lose, they lost the quarterback. What's the quarterback to Miami?
Cam Ward.
But both rosters are somewhat still Power 5 level. I mean, if you could call it that. And then, I had Liberty in Memphis as well. I mean, Liberty was just in New Year's Six, probably ahead of schedule for Jamie Chadwell. But Memphis was my number one team.
All right, so let's move on to the next question though. It comes from Nick Pyle, and he says the Kings are back, in reference to finally posting again on Instagram. What is the biggest trap game on Oregon's schedule?
This one's tough. I am going to say Michigan State on October 5th. As of now, the Ducks would just be a massive favorite in that game. But maybe I look at, here's my scenario, is Jonathan Smith, obviously familiar with the Ducks. Maybe he has them, the Spartans, a little ahead of schedule. It's also the week before Oregon has a showdown with Ohio State at home. So maybe could be a look ahead spot if that, you know, really is such a thing.
Yeah. Okay. I went with a different game, but another game where, I mean, it was hard to find a,
they have like qualifies elite games or like bad games.
Yeah. There was no kind of like, we had to pick some game where they're a big favorite or else it wouldn't have counted as a trap. So, I picked at home against Maryland on November 9th.
Yeah.
Not particularly high on Maryland this year. They lose a lot, including Talia, but they've been consistently competitive for the past few years. So maybe they should be decent. And Maryland's coming off of a bye. So that's a nice little advantage for them. Oregon will be traveling the week before to Michigan. So kind of a long way. And maybe that's a physical game if that has any lingering impact. And then the same as you, kind of a look ahead, they go at Wisconsin the next week. So maybe they're, if that is such a thing, maybe that could come into play.
Yeah, that was good. But yeah, Oregon, it'll be a fun team this year. All right. Jeremy, one of our patrons, said, with Caitlin Clark kind of breaking the all-time scoring record, I'd be interested in hearing about any players who are high on career stats leaderboards going into this season and if they have chances of breaking any records.
This was, I think, my favorite question of the episode.
I did a deep dive.
Me too. I was preparing for this podcast and time was running out and I was like, oh God, I've spent like half the time preparing for this question alone. I better get to the other questions.
There's a lot.
Yeah, there are a lot of potential. And because of the COVID season still being in play, there's a lot of maybe asterisks on some of these records because, they're getting an extra year. But, okay, so the big one that I didn't realize, I haven't heard anybody talk about, Dylan Gabriel has a great chance of passing Case Keenum to be number one all time in college football history in passing yards. Gabriel is currently eighth all time. He needs 2,207 to get to number two. And then to get to number one, he needs 4,352 yards. That's to tie. So 4,352, I mean, that's doable. Bo Nix last year for Oregon had 4,508. That was in 14 games. So if Gabriel stays healthy, if Oregon, makes the Big Ten title or plays in a playoff game or two, then, he's got a good shot. He also needs 30 passing touchdowns to pass Case Keenum or to tie Case Keenum for number one all time in passing touchdowns. He needs 26 total touchdowns to tie Keenum for most touchdowns responsible for in a career. So there's, well, I'll let you take if you've got,
I've got
more, but
31 to pass.
Yeah.
31 passing touchdowns. Okay, well, I'll just stick with quarterback. Did you do anything on Will Rogers?
I did. Yeah.
Okay, so I assume he could break the record for most completions. He needs 245 to break Case Keenum again, his mark, which he did 505 and 415 in two different years at Mississippi State. Now it'll be a little different offense, of course, at Washington, but it looks like he's going to pass. He could pass guys like Case Keenum, Luke Falk, Graham Harrell, Landry Jones, Timmy Chang, kind of a lot of the guys you think about with like these mm-hmm. slingers, could break the pass attempts record of Timmy Chang. The one that's most interesting to me though, is he could pass Colt Brennan's all-time completion percentage of 70.4%. He's eighth at 69.3, but if he has an efficient year with a good team around him, he could do that.
Mm-hmm. He also has the chance to have participated in the most offensive plays in college football history.
Oh, wow.
He's at 2,041, which is 546 behind Timmy Chang, who was number one. So he's got a shot there. Dylan Gabriel also has a shot there. He's only 28 plays behind Rogers. So there's that. Kicker, Jonah Dalmas for Boise State. He's got 80 career-made field goals, which is 15th all-time, but he only needs 17 more to tie Christopher Dunn of NC State for the most field goals made all-time. And for reference, he's made 26, 23, and 24 the last 3 years. So really good 100. Shot to just get 17. And he's also number three all-time in field goal percentage. Well, it kind of depends on where you look.
Like,
I think the official NCAA record books, he's third. Because I think the leader had only kicked like 50 field goals in his career. And I think the qualifying is like you have to make 1.2 per game. So anyway, long story short, he's third all time in the NCAA record books at 88.9%, just 1% behind Nick Skiba of Wake Forest. And so if he has, say, 27 attempts this year, because that's what he's averaged over the last few years, if he makes 26 of them, then he breaks the record. So he needs to go like 26 for 27 or better to get that.
Needs a lot of shorties
record.
And hey, maybe. Okay. So that's a good one. And then, you know, what's funny is this was more just like when I was researching this, like most of the kick return categories and even interceptions or punt returns, like they're probably not ever going to be broken, like the way that the game's played. Like it's so much of those lists are older guys. Like, and punt returns actually surprised me too, just because that hasn't been totally taken out of the game. But in the top 25 of people in terms of punt return yards, only one player is after 2010, and that was Dante Pettis at 23rd. So like even the punt return yards are like way down.
I wonder if those kind of rugby style or kicks, punts have something to do with it. I don't know what else would be.
Fair catches and more, you know, now the last few years, more aggressive fourth down. The fact that there's only one guy in the top 25 after 2010 just surprised me. And then even interceptions, there's only in the top 70 of interceptions, only a handful of those guys played in the last 15 years. It's just like, for some reason, I guess maybe good corners aren't staying around.
That's got to be part of it.
Or they're not throwing to them. I don't know what it is, but.
And I know we pass a lot more these days, but I also feel like players, the interception percentages are lower. So I don't know if that more than makes up for it. It seems that they're lower to me, right? Like you go back in the day, even like a good quarterback was throwing 16 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, you know? Like these days, it's like you're throwing 50 touchdowns to 7 interceptions. I don't know. Another one, Jason Henderson, Old Dominion. He's 144 tackles away.
Is he still around?
Yeah. Well, but he's only played 3 years. So like this one isn't even an asterisk.
Oh, okay. I was thinking of someone else, but yeah, you're right. Okay.
So he's 144 tackles away from tying Carlton Marshall of Troy for the most tackles all time at 578. So yeah, so he needs 144 to tie. And the last 2 years, he's had 186 and 170. So if he stays healthy, good chance he's going to be all-time leading tackler.
That's like
in
one of our
history.
Most legit ones here, like a four-year.
Yeah, four exactly. Year. No asterisk there. Although, I don't, maybe a friendly scorekeeper.
That's it has been interesting.
Assisted tackles.
Assisted tackles
are massive.
To watch. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have any more?
No, but there's nothing like obviously as huge as the Caitlin Clark record, but there's a couple there that are for
passing
coaches,
yards, that's pretty big. Dylan Gabriel.
Passing yards is a big one, but there is such a major asterisk.
Yeah.
But that would be a good one and a fun one to follow. Like the coaching ones, there's really nothing like now that Saban retired, there's no real like active coach that's like Mac Brown's just doesn't have the longevity to like to catch anybody in terms of all-time bowls, all-time wins, all that. But
I didn't look at coaches. But
I looked a little bit. Just they're just yeah. Mac Brown is like the best of the older guys left now that Saban's gone. So
all right, we had two questions that were related. One from McNutty82. Hello, been out of the loop, but former longtime listener. Didn't there used to be three of you? And then Rutgers Todd, can we have an update on Ryan? We just want to know he's safe and being fed. If not, do you have memorial plans?
Yeah, no, there's three. The middle brother, Ryan, he's on a sabbatical, just kind of some work duties, basketball coaching duties, scheduled travel has just kind of recently made him unavailable. He's alive and well. Michael, slips him a piece of meat every now and then, but I probably wasn't supposed to say that. We feed him.
No, he's fed well.
The cage is air conditioned.
I forget what I was going to say.
He's doing good. He's all good.
He is doing good. Next question.
Oh, yeah. We've got one from Pass the Damn Ball. And this is in regards to the winners and losers of the new playoff format.
Yes. Now I remember it just would have been really funny if we just gaslit that guy into thinking like, no, it's just always been two. always been two of us.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. So yeah, new playoff format. And he's referring to the proposed 14 team format that's come out. That's getting a lot of buzz, which is three automatic SEC bids, three Big Ten, two ACC, two Big 12, one G5, whatever you want to call it, and then three at-larges. And then with maybe first-round buys, the two first-round buys are automatically to the Big Ten and SEC. That part is, it's all up in the air, but that's sort of the proposal. Well, first of all, before we even get into it, like, what is your reaction to this? Do you like this or not?
Well, here's why I'm going to say. I'm going to say I don't like it just because I don't even know. We haven't even had the 12 team. Like,
I know.
I want to see how this works, like with this many teams, if it's like if the product is good at all. Like, are we getting some really crappy games that we don't need to see? Like, I'm not saying that's what it's going to be, but we haven't even given this a chance to kind of see down the road. But again, obviously, it's just to get more money for these guaranteed money for these conferences. But.
No, yeah. I'm 100% agreement. I think almost every college football fan is like, why? We don't need to do this right now. Let's give the 12 a shot. Like, yeah, this
right.
So anyway, agreed with you there. But as far as winners and losers, I think the Big 12 is a clear winner here because most years certainly in a 12-team playoff and even in a 14-team, I think most years they would only get one team in. So to get locked in with two is nice. But as far as other win, I mean, the ACC, it seems kind of neutral. Two spots seems fair. Other winners are just the TV networks, the players, the coaches, administrator, anyone that makes money from the sport, just because this is just a little bit more money for everybody. That's of course why they are making this decision.
Yeah. Yeah. If you like on campus meaningful games, that's a winner. I would say, so I thought about this a lot, and in terms of a loser, the jury is still out on this again, because we haven't even seen the 12 teamer, but I want to see we always say that expanding the playoff isn't going to dilute the regular season at all. But if you look at just this past year, I'm worried about the rivalry week and conference championship week. So I understand there's still incentive, you know, of better seeding potentially. I don't know in the new format, but you know, and buys. But look at this past year. Arguably the three biggest games on rivalry week: Ohio State, Michigan, the Iron Bowl, and Florida State. So the regular season Ohio State Michigan game literally would have meant next to nothing, since they would have, both teams would have clinched a rematch in the Big Ten title the next week, which would, the winner of that would determine who gets the, you know, the bye in this new form, in the 12 team format. The miracle play for Alabama in the Iron Bowl might not have really mattered, because Bama was already going to be in the SEC title game anyways. And again, they would have had a chance to beat Georgia, which they did, and get the bye in this, you know, the 12 team scenario. And then the Florida State, since it's not a conference game, Florida State had basically almost would have had very little incentive to play, because winning or losing that game had no impact on them playing in the ACC title for that. So I don't know. I just kind of looked at that. I didn't really think about that. I know it's important to have the seeding, but that would kind of suck. You might have guys just resting players.
Yeah. And that's what all this is about. Like you say, expanding the playoff, its impact on the regular season. Like, I think that is what diehard college football fans are worried about. Like, what is too much? What cuts into the regular? How many teams is too much to where our enjoyment of the regular season is impacted? The 12 team, I've sort of been, you know, the more I've thought about it and just sort of the way the incentives are lined up, I can, I've sort of talked myself into it. But again, I want to see how it plays out. We haven't had it yet, but I've sort of talked myself into, you know, I think it is strikes the balance well, like that. Yes, maybe some regular season games will matter less, but also some will matter more. And obviously the playoff itself will be super fun. So
that's the part I keep coming around to, is that those playoff games will be more fun, but I want to see if it, you know, if that just offsets what we would have gotten in conference championship week, or I mean in rivalry week, but who knows.
And adding two more teams makes the regular season matter, like you say, even less. So it is worrisome. It's like, I already worried if the 12 was, are we going too far? And now you just are going to add two more 2 years later. It's like, okay. And then, you know, when are you going to go to 16? Like, that's, you know, so it's just,
I know.
But I think you made a good point there about the non-conference matchups, though, because I think in this 14-team format, even compared to the 12, losers are, you know, people who are fans of non-conference matchups, like, which I think is all of us, those are super fun, because those are diminished. Their importance is even more diminished, because these conference auto bids, these, you know, which the three to the SEC, three to the Big Ten, et cetera, those in themselves, non-conference games do not matter, right? Aren't they just going to come down to standings or something?
I don't know.
I don't know exactly.
I thought of it more like it would be still like a committee deciding those. You'd have one that's the conference champ, and then the two maybe that are committee.
Perhaps decision. I should have read more articles in detail, but the vibe, I thought I remember seeing like that.
Purely standings.
That it would be that each conference would decide it themselves. I don't know, to be honest with you, but I didn't think it would be a committee.
I mean,
deciding those. I thought it would be kind of some sort of automatic thing. And if that is the case, then those non-conference games, the at-larges, of course, the non-conference games would still matter, and they would still matter for seeding. But like as far as getting in, they really would have much diminished importance.
Yeah, no, that'd be interesting. I also thought of that too from the sense of the non-power conferences. Like I feel like there's less incentive for some of these bigger. So they're a winner in that they get an automatic seat at the table, at least one chance in the dance. You know, the chips are still stacked against them, but at least they get some representation. And, you know, if they're a David and knock off a Goliath on the road, that could really enhance that school's position, especially as you go down the road. If there's more realignment, maybe they get a chance to join. But I think of it, though, on the side of the bigger schools, there's, you know, it feels like we're obviously getting closer to these mega conferences. They're not going to schedule as many of these high mid-major teams. Like, there's no incentive for them to play like Boise State or something. That's just an example. I don't know. I just really got to see how this, we really have no idea how these scenarios are going to work out with committees, and you know, having a loss or two isn't going to matter as much.
And we're trying to plan all of these, this playoff format with, like you say, the realignment so much in flux. So it just, this is going to change. It already has. We made this big change to the 12-team playoff, and now suddenly it's looking like it's only going to last for 2 years. And what happens if and when Florida State leaves the ACC, or, you know, what if that happens in the next couple years? Are they really, you know, Florida State and then Clemson leave? Are they really going to, they're not going to give two,
I know,
auto bids to the ACC, are they? I don't know. I mean, I guess they gave them to the Big 12, but I don't know.
Yeah, now there's a lot to shake out, and especially we don't even know how some of these, if one of these conferences adds a team or two, maybe they're not going to have like only one conference championship. Maybe they're going to have like two divisions and those played. You know, it's like there's so much to shake out.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wish, well, let's get to the question from James. What's the format you would implement? Doesn't have to be any past or current proposed format.
I personally have said this when they were talking about expanding to four. I would like six was kind of like my dream scenario always, where like you had the top two got a bye, and then you had the other four play to advance. Just because now this past year was an exception, and that has made me more open-minded to more teams. But how many times in the last 20 years has there been more than four teams that really, or six teams that could really win the national title? It just like hasn't happened. The top, you know, two teams or three teams are always just head and shoulders better. And so that's why I was kind of like six was my max, just to entertain the playoff idea.
But I thought about six as well, but how would you determine who gets in? Is it six, just six at large?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah. That's true. In my dream scenario, it would be six at large.
Okay. So,
because yeah, you could have a very weak, like Big 12 champ or something.
Right. And so there's no G5 or, you know, non-power conference slot, but they could make it if they earn it, like Cincinnati did in the 14th.
I'm tough like that.
Okay. But I think, I mean, I didn't even hate the 14 playoffs. So I could pretty much talk myself into most formats, but yeah, the 6-team, I do like the fact that the top two getting byes, that keeps the every game really matters thing, because that's huge, especially when there's only six teams. Cause
that's,
you know,
one,
the three
one
seed,
marquee game,
you can definitely lose to a six seed. Like, yeah, that would be a huge incentive to play every game.
Yes.
And you can't really afford a loss, or maybe you can't. So, okay. So you maybe would go to six. This was one of the last questions that came in, so I haven't had a ton of time to think about this one, but I really want
national championships. You're just old school. Just play the old bowls like they were.
No, I don't want that. But I think the 12-team playoff that they came out with, like I've already, maybe it's just sort of, I will like whatever is the status quo, but they really came out with a good plan. Like the fact that to get that first round bye, you have to win a conference championship. Boom. That makes conference championship games automatically super important, no matter what. Yeah. So that's really good. I like the fact that it included a non-power team. So there's, you know, having the five automatic bids that made sure that one team from a non-power conference was always getting in. That's just fun. There's, you know, like you say, the David and Goliath there. What else I like about it? Well, here's what I would change though. I like the first round being home sites. I would also, of course, have the second round be home sites, because I really want there to be a strong reward for being a top four team, because we really want to make that regular season matter. So
yeah, that's true.
Not only giving them a bye, but giving them a home game in their first, also a reward for being a top four team. Like that's cool to have a home playoff game.
Yeah.
So I would have that. I'm undecided on the semis. Do I want to keep it at home? I mean, that is what's great about college football, is the home atmospheres. But bowl games have history too. So I don't know. Whatever. I guess I'll say the semifinals will have bowl games. rotating bowl games, and then the national title, I'll say keep it at the Rose Bowl permanently. So basically, yeah, mine is just an adjusted version of what we're doing this year.
Yeah. I really can't wait to see how this shakes out. And it might, like, this year might not be the perfect picture, but maybe the year after will be. I don't know. I'm curious.
Yeah. Okay. But that was those were good questions. Moving on, Jeremy says, a lot of people say college football is ruined or that they will stop watching. What set of changes would actually make you stop watching?
I mean, it would take a substantial amount. Like, I'm a sports nut, so I watch just about anything. Because I was thinking, okay, well, what if, like, you know, the SEC and Big Ten break away from the NCAA and maybe they just add a few more marquee names from the ACC, Big 12, or wherever? What would that do? And I'd still watch. I wouldn't like it, but I'd watch. Now, if something like that happens and it changes, like, maybe that eliminates March Madness and they have their own basketball tournament, like, maybe that starts to tick people off. Again, I'm still going to watch.
Wait, what are you saying?
Well, there's the talk of the SEC and Big Ten breaking away from the NCAA and kind of doing their thing. So I'm just saying I wouldn't mind that. I wouldn't like it, but I would still watch.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of scenarios.
You brought up March Madness.
Oh, just because, like, the March Madness is run by the NCAA, and if somehow them splitting off unless they were able to just split off in football, or if that actually impacted them from having a national, like, NCAA tournament with both.
Oh, okay.
This is a total hypothetical that none of these details have been shaken out, but, I'm just trying to think of scenarios that would kind of get me to not, like, even if it was NFL light where, you know, players are totally free agents and they're just going to teams with highest payrolls, I'm still going to watch. I think it would take something drastic. Like, I don't even think that this doesn't even seem fathomable, but maybe they whittle the sport down to 20 or 30 teams. Or if the NFL got involved and basically said, we're just going to have a minor league product. That's where the best high school prospects are going to go. And therefore, like, the college football is like JV. But again, I don't think that's going to happen, but that's the scenario where I would be like, okay, if we're not even getting the good high school players, then
that is a great answer. Yeah. If the best high school players aren't going to college football, that would be a big factor. Yeah. If there's some other kind of, like you say, JV or minor league. Yeah. Yeah. Cause a lot of people talk about college football becoming basically the minor league of the NFL.
Yeah.
And okay. But yeah, I think I can live with that if it's becomes more professionalized in some ways. I mean, but yeah, if it's not even the main thing that high schoolers go to, so that's a good one. For this question, I was just thinking, why do I love college football? Which is kind of tough to pinpoint one reason, but to me, it's just way less sterile than the NFL. Like, the game day atmospheres, the fan bases are crazy. The fact that it looks different, like the offenses of certain teams look different, different styles of play. That there isn't parity like the NFL. Like, there are actual upsets that matter, you know, like NFL teams, there's not a ton separating them, right? Like, the biggest spread you're usually getting is two touchdowns and that's, you know, not that common. So if it turned into something like that, like, there's a bunch of contraction where it's only the biggest schools. And so there is kind of more of that. It's more homogenous than, but I would still watch, you know, everything I've said so far, but that is part of what I like. But if anything that sort of got rid of those things though, then maybe I wouldn't. So, but what would happen to diminish those things? I guess if, you know, I don't know, if it just became like, if fewer and fewer students, like if fewer and fewer students cared about the programs, if it's somehow separated more and more from the schools, and it's just kind of the school slapping their name on the product, but there's not really that sort of, I don't know the word, but
no, but if there was like, if it became like the Microsoft Nebraska Huskers or something, I'm just thinking if it became corporate, like, again, I'd still watch, but I was just trying to think of odd things that could happen.
Yeah. But I liked your answer. Yeah, as long as students and people, alumni care still, and the best players, or a lot of them are from high school, are still going to play college football, then I'll probably still watch. But I could imagine the scenario you laid out, maybe I would lose interest.
Yeah, it'd be harder to follow. Okay. One from Shrewski, another patron. If you could go back to last season and change the outcome of one specific game, which would it be?
Good question. I guess, so the memorable thing from last year is Florida State not making the playoffs, so I guess I could go back and change something that would make that happen, but here I am, like, a few months later, like, nah, it's okay. I'm over it. Sorry, Florida State fans.
It would have been, the thing about that is, if you had kind of hindsight involved, like, so if Jordan Travis doesn't get injured, the committee, like, it would have been, would they really, truly have left an SEC champ, Alabama, that had just beaten, you know, the two-time champ, Georgia, out? Because Alabama was the four seed in this scenario. Like, would they, but then you also had Texas who beat them. Like, it would have been so fascinating. Like, they had an easy answer. They said Jordan Travis was injured.
Okay. So maybe not changing a result then. What if we change Jordan Travis doesn't get injured?
That's what I thought about.
Okay. And Florida State, like,
they just looked good against,
win big. Yeah, they look,
they won the really ACC good. Title, like, you know, and they were undefeated.
Would they then?
Florida State would have been in.
Yeah, you're right. They would have had to have been. I mean, I thought they had to be in as it was, but with Jordan Travis, come on. So
then my thing was, and we probably talked about this already, but just like, what do you do with, well, we didn't really talk about the fact if you had a healthy Jordan Travis.
No.
Then what do you do with Texas and Alabama?
What the committee does, they do that head to head. So
they do, but
Alabama gets left out.
Would they really have done that? You'll never know the answer, but
no.
I agree. That's probably what they would have done, but
I've never been, I mean, by the time the actual selection so happened, there was enough buzz and odds showing that, wow, there's a chance Florida State,
right,
a decent chance they're going to be left out. But just when I went to bed on that Saturday night, I was like, I mean, Florida State's in.
Yeah, you didn't really think. I mean, there was only a small percent chance you thought of that.
I can't believe they did that. I still can't believe it. Anyway.
Yeah.
What were we talking about? Which game would I change? So I think I didn't go the Florida State route. Sorry to Washington. No, I'm changing the Pac-12 title. Oregon beats Washington because I had a Heisman ticket on Bo Nix, and I think he would have won. It's not a sure thing at all, but I think he would have won if they would have won that game and he had a good game. But also because I still think Oregon was better than Washington, and I think if it somehow worked out, an Oregon-Michigan national title, that would have been a better game.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good one. That's a good one. You know, Shrew asked this question. He's a Michigan guy, so he wouldn't change a single game.
No.
I mean, for him, maybe I should just say Ohio State over Michigan just to piss him off. But no. I don't have anything like dramatic, but I just remember a losing bet that I would like to change, and it was one of the last ones. It was the famous Toastery Bowl. I had Old Dominion against Western Kentucky. Ooh. And Old Dominion was up like 35-14 at the beginning of the fourth quarter, ended up losing to a backup quarterback. I was only given like 2.5, just
tough
bad
scene.
Beat. So I would change a bad beat.
Okay. Next question from Foxtrot Charlie. How important or not is the athletic director in the success of a football program?
That's tough. That's not my forte, but I don't think it's imperative to have a good AD, but I do think it can help. I think it's more important to not have one that's a hindrance, of course. Like
that, I agree. Like not having a bad AD is the important thing.
Yeah. Like I'd rather have one that just kind of stays clear and does his own thing as opposed to getting over involved and, like, you know, making sure that attention goes to basketball more than football, or he's getting involved too much in like staff hires or whatever. Like you don't necessarily want that. But I've seen how, like, with some of these schools, like how it really helps when there's alignment in the program. Like if the AD can help the coach out for like fundraising for a new, you know, facility, mm-hmm. like he can take care of that, not worry about the, mm-hmm. you know, the football coach can just do the the recruiting and coaching up and getting his staff. But yeah, so that's the view I looked at it from.
Agreed. Yeah. It seems like, yeah, it's just, you just don't want a bad one because like you can look at situations like Ray Anderson, I think his name was, at Arizona State.
That's what kept coming to my mind too.
Yeah. It's like, he just hired his old buddy Herm Edwards, which again, I know coaching high, this is, it's not like actually the first couple of years it was actually going fine, but
it was, yeah.
But at the time, you're like, that is a weird hire, and it did blow up in your face, and so it wasn't too surprising the way it played out, and just the reason for hiring him didn't seem to be a sound one. So that, I think, is an example of a bad idea, bad AD, and a bad idea, really hurting the program. USC kept hiring former players who were, you know, maybe not qualified for the position of athletic director. And that seemed to hurt USC, just, you know, the scandals in the athletic department and just made it difficult to attract good candidates. It just kind of seemed like a little bit of a mess. So I think I've seen it firsthand where it's can be really detrimental. And as far as like, you could argue that ADs are really important because they're the ones primarily who make the decision as to who the head coach will be. And the head coach is, of course, by far the most important person. But the problem is, we, even like a long tenured AD is only going to make a few football hires. So I just don't think we ever have a sample, a large enough sample to know if someone's good at hiring football coaches, because there's just so much uncertainty and randomness and luck. Like, we don't know who's going to be a good head coach. Maybe some ADs are better at hiring than others, but I don't think we have the sample size to know that. Like, you can't just say because a guy hired two good coaches that he's good at hiring. Like, I don't know. It might have just been luck, or just, I don't know.
Or, and you also could look at, like, you know, everyone will talk about, like, you know, when Nebraska hired Scott Frost, like, that wasn't a bad hire because everybody and their mother wanted him, but like, it just so happened Nebraska got him. So does that make the AD a bad AD?
No.
It just didn't work.
Every AD in the country, if they had the Nebraska job,
right,
and could have made that hire, I think would have made that same hire.
Yeah.
Much.
So it's so, just, it is, you're right. It is a, there's some luck involved.
Or if Lincoln Riley doesn't work out at USC, it was still an amazing hire by Mike Bone, right? Like, it's just, you just, it has to be. So yeah, that's why, judging just by the results, I just don't think but
the behind the scenes stuff that can lead to good or bad. So
yeah, so I think that's the stuff that isn't random, like you said, the being good at fundraising and just running a, you know, being professional and not making dumb decisions.
Yep. All right. We got one from Brandon Jones on Twitter. What teams are going to be the most entertaining to watch next season? This is him. This is Brandon talking. Last year, I couldn't get enough of Washington because of their close games and awesome offense. Michigan because of the scandal. And then, because he's a sicko, Iowa.
Love it. Okay, I've got, he gave three teams, I've got three teams. Ole Miss,
just because that was one of mine.
They always have really good offense, and they've added a ton of great defensive players. You always got to love Lane Kiffin, so they're going to be exciting. And this is the first year where, heading into the season, it's like, hey, they could be legit.
Yeah, I agree.
Penn State, because they've always been, of course, very, very good, but I think this is the first time in a few years that they could be fun to watch. I don't think Penn State's been very fun because of the offense. But now, with Andy Kotelnicki coming in at offensive coordinator, I mean, Kansas has been super fun to watch. So I think Penn State has the chance to be the same way this season. And then if you're looking for fun late at night, I'm going with Arizona because they've still got Noah Fifita. They got T-Mac at receiver. And then moving to the Big 12, anyone can beat anyone in that conference, so you would think there's going to be a lot of close games.
That's a good one. So yeah, I was with you on Ole Miss. You know, Oregon should have one of the best offenses with Dylan Gabriel. Like, he's not going to match Bo Nix production, but still very fun to watch.
Maybe he will.
Ohio State's, if you like defense, Ohio State's defense should be nasty. And then to go along with that, if Will Howard takes to that offense, the returning talent and the transfer class that they got, Ohio State could, you know, It could make them a dominant Big Ten team. And then I got just two others. So South Florida, if you want an under the radar team, I think they could make some noise. They made some great strides last year. They got Byron Brown, one of the best kind of non-high power, high major, whatever we're calling it, quarterbacks out there. And then if Grayson McCall takes to the new offense at NC State, they could be a fun team to watch in the ACC.
Okay. Is that it? Are those all the questions?
I think we did it.
Okay, cool. Well, that was a good set of questions. Thanks everyone who sent those in. We'll do it again sometime soon. I feel like it had been a while since we'd done an Ask the Bros, but they're always good. I think they're some of my favorite episodes just because you get a lot of variety. But thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week.